Welcome to Tech Insights from Infotech Research Group, the podcast where our experts cut through all the noise and focus on what really matters for technology leaders. Imagine this. You're on vacation in Germany, and you rent a car. You drive it out of the parking garage, turn the corner, and bam! You collide with another vehicle. Where did that guy come from? You get out and meet the other driver, only to realize they speak French. Parlez-vous français? Now, first of all, this puts a serious damper on your vacation. Second of all, how are you ever going to figure out the insurance situation? You're from abroad. The car you rented is from a German company. The driver you hit is from France. I mean, this could become an international level dispute before it's resolved. Well, this is one of the problems that my guest today has been working to solve for everybody. He's using an emerging technology to do it. We have Bob Crozier, the chief architect and global head of blockchain for Allianz. Welcome, Bob.
Hi, Brian. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, glad to talk with you here today. So I was reading an opinion column you wrote, Bob, for Ledger Insights, and you say that 2021 was a tipping year for enterprise blockchain. Can you tell me why that is?
Yeah, sure. For us at Allianz, we've achieved a real breakthrough with our product going live at such a scale. The problem pattern that you described in the introduction is real, and it costs us a fair bit to administer. To us, this was evidence that the real business value is there for blockchain. Other projects and products have gone live also, like RiskPool's product for B3i, for example, which is a blockchain company that Allianz is invested in. Financial services is a place where business leaders sometimes like to see who else is doing this before they jump in. And I would like to see Allianz as a reference case for those other business leaders. And having done it once and been so public about our success, the conversations with other business leaders inside my own organization, and indeed with other organizations, are now about the business value and less so about the technology. The proven technology is just an enabler after all.
Okay, so 2021 was the tipping point, but you and Allianz have been looking at blockchain development going back several years. So I wonder, what was the sort of business problem that brought your attention to blockchain as a potential solution? Tell us more about that.
Sure. The conversation about blockchain really started in earnest in 2015. So with the emergence of smart contracts capability demonstrated by the Ethereum platform. So we all sort of remember those early days. Smart contracts are just workflows, really, workflows between counterparties. And when this innovation dropped, like-minded individuals in Allianz and other insurers in Europe certainly immediately understood this value. And in administering complex multi-party contracts where the presence of the reinsurer and the risk transfer ecosystem is required. In a past life, I trained as an actuary, actually. So I've got a long history in modeling reinsurance contracts. So taking the paper contract and turning it into code. And so I immediately understood the value of those contracts, if you like, those smart contracts between counterparties. And it was these contracts that lend themselves to smart contracts and therefore blockchain. In fact, my very first POC that my team created way back then was a pandemic excess of loss contract, a very simple one. We know now that it might have been quite useful.
Right. I guess you were developing that just in case, not expecting that it would be something that would come into play in a couple of years' time.
Absolutely, but it was pressing the time, but it's quite a simple thing, you know. It's if something like that comes along, it's black and white. Yeah, and that's what these smart contracts do. They codify clauses and contracts, and that's what really got us started and kickstarted us off in 2015 thinking about this.
Right. Okay. So going back to 2015, and I think at that time, the concept of using blockchain in the enterprise was quite new. Did you get any pushback at that time? I mean, how do you create that space to work on an emerging technology and push towards an innovative type of solution with it?
I think, like I said, like-minded individuals, sort of, there was a few of us all recognized the potential at the same time, and we sought each other out through our contacts and connections and got together in a room in underneath one of our offices in Munich and sat down and discussed where we thought this could go, and reinsurance contracting seemed to be the obvious starting place. So it was really that inquisitiveness, that curiosity, that acknowledgement of problems in the industry that could be solved using this technology, and that set in train then the sort of process of educating ourselves, learning more about it, you know, getting our hands dirty with the technology and really starting to try it out.
Okay. And it was just last year that you went into production in Europe with a blockchain system that streamlines international motor insurance claims. So I want you to take us through the different development phases that lead up to that launch. So we talked about what happened in 2015 and how you sort of started investigating the technology and the problem that you had. But when do you go to proof of concept? When do you scale it up? Can you walk us through all the different phases?
Sure, absolutely, would love to. In 2018, my new team, the Global Blockchain Center of Competence, set about educating Allianz on the true value of blockchain and distributed ledger technology for our businesses. In that year, an idea was pitched to the Allianz International Claims Conference, which gained traction with some of the bigger countries in Europe. And at the same time, my team in the Blockchain Center of Competence, we're partnering with Fortis, which is a joint venture between the Technological University of Munich and the State of Bavaria, to bring real business problems to the master's students for them to solve as part of attaining their master's degree. So, with a bit of persuasion with the business leaders inside Allianz, we persuaded them to say, "Let's take this problem statement public and let's give it to the students." And see what they can do with it, and that was really the sort of starting point. Over the course of 12 weeks, our business experts, myself, some of my team, we mentored these master's students through the problems and the open source technologies that they were using. So they were trying defining architectures, what open source components could go together, but more importantly, how they could solve the business problem, And then after the 12 weeks, they presented the use cases back to us in proofs of concept using the likes of Ethereum, IPFS, BigchainDB, and some of the other open source technologies that were there. Now, the International Claims Service POC didn't win, but it came second. And like all these things, it was useful. I recall it was a rental product that came first, if I recall correctly. But it came second, so we took that POC back in-house and looked at it in detail, and it was a good showcase to sell to the business leaders. Remember, International Claims in Europe incorporates 23 countries across Europe, so we sold the idea to our business leaders in collaboration with our colleagues at the group center. And from there, they agreed, yep, this is a good idea, let's... So from there, we have business buy-in. I think that's very important. Yeah, having the business leaders buy in, they recognize the business value. And from there, we proceeded with a startup, a company called Luther Systems in the UK, to build an MVP, a pilot, and get it up and running with three or four of the larger countries to really demonstrate and build something that they would want to interact with and use. And we deployed for business testing. So at the same time, the colleagues in the group center set about then building the strong backing from all of the operating entities in Europe, all of the Allianz insurance companies in Europe, to take it on. Because as we say in Allianz, blockchain is a team sport. So we either all go together or we don't, yeah? And so we set around, you know, encouraging, persuading, and getting the buy-in from all the 25 business units across Europe. That helped us realize this ambition. So now we're into 2020. We're in build mode. Small dev SecOps team based both in Munich and in our Allianz Technology division in India. and we're getting building. And by May 17th of 2021, we get the okay to go live. And within one business day, we have decommissioned the old system, migrated all of the live claims data that's ongoing onto the new blockchain-based platform. And we go live seamlessly to over 400 of our colleagues across Europe who use the platform, and an extremely successful migration. And now hundreds of millions of dollars worth of value is settled across the platform on an ongoing basis. That brings us, we're on Wednesday evening. We mined our 1 millionth block on our Allianz ICS ledger, and each of those blocks represents a country to country or peer to peer transaction, and that's just showing the volume that we're pushing through, and we're very proud of it.
Right, and talking about that volume, and talking about how you retired the old claim system is a big important piece of this, because we're not just talking about a proof of concept here, not just talking about an experiment. This is actually the system, the infrastructure that you're relying on today to manage this whole process between a number of different European subsidiaries, right?
Absolutely. So this is there's no parallel run here. We took the decision to go. To go all in and go big bang and switch over, because we wanted to prove the value of the product, but at the same time you can't do that if you've got an easy fallback to an older system. And it made sense to close out that sort of old architecture, three-tier application, monolithic core that just wasn't quite living up to the needs that of the business, and to go live with the new one. So it was very important. I think decommissioning is the oft not talked about part of technology, the less sexy bit of technology, that replacing replacing old with new is very, very much part of the agenda here to drive down the costs and to move to the new technology landscape.
So we've talked about the technology development in the process of getting it from idea and conception and pilot to actually implementing and operating on this model. Let's talk about a little bit more of the process and what is actually happening and what's the pain that's being solved, right? And I laid out in my introduction here the situation that we find ourselves in as people, in the consumer type of experience. But after that, what's happening behind the scenes when you have that German subsidiary of Allianz, and then you have the France subsidiary? They have to do this job of resolving who's paying what when it comes to insurance. So taking you through that process and just explain all the different inputs that go into it and how blockchain correlates all that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you rightly described the sort of scenario that triggers this process. So the German contract, so the German car insurance contract, is involved in an accident in France, and this doesn't impact on the customer, this back office process. So the customer, their claim is settled in accordance with our sort of in accordance with our processes really quickly, and we take care of our customers. So, but behind the scenes, then Allianz France, of course, in this scenario, they have went and found out the claims reports, the police reports, the accident report, possibly doctor's reports and so on relating to the accident. All of that takes time and effort. And then they collate all of that information and put all of that information then into the system, which then, of course, the holder of the car insurance contract, i.e. Germany, then they have to reimburse France for all of that effort and move money from one bank account in France to a bank account in Germany. And if I take you through a little bit the challenges there, prior to our new product, there was no standardized intercompany billing process, for example. So a lot of emails, spreadsheets back and forwards, phone calls to align on the numbers and how much and when, meaning lots of reconciliation tasks involved, if you like, where manual bills are required to be created. There's long cycle times required to settle the claims process. between two companies. So that could take weeks in some cases. And that means money sitting in the wrong bank account for a longer period of time. I feel like, you know, there's a concept of escrow. If the money's not in your own bank account, you can't really do anything with it. Yeah. So there's that sort of idea as well. And then, of course, with everything that's manual, there are keying errors, the need for rework, you know, and just the normal sort of, you know, humans are fallible beings. Yeah. We don't get it perfect all the time. So just a number of those combined and collected problems that all come together. And it just, that means it takes longer to settle. Now, blockchain and our solution here helps across three very specific areas. So, you know, when we look for blockchain patterns or patterns that blockchain can solve, we look at reconciliation, duplicate processes, and audit trails, for example. So the three smart contracts that sit at the heart of our international claims solution, they solve this reconciliation problem. So whatever goes in, it's automatically synchronized to the node in Germany, for example, from France. So we have the same view of the same data. And that manages then the intercompany billing from creation to settle status, codifying in any regulatory requirements. So, you know, in Europe, you have to make sure you get the value added tax amounts, for example, correct in your jurisdiction, or there could be legal penalties there. Even in extreme cases, the threat of jail time for your colleagues for not getting it right.
Yikes.
And that does that VAT calculation, that VAT calculation, and really allows us to implement then sort of straight through processing of those threshold agreements between the two countries that are responsible. And sometimes, obviously, in Europe, it could be even maybe more than two countries. It could be three or four, and if there's severe enough accident and so on. So really complex. The second smart contract acts as an intercompany workflow engine. You know, it verifies the events between the two companies, ensuring task settlements are done within the agreed service levels and between the two companies. So that's really a sort of a workflow manager that does that job really well, you know, alerting you to settle status of tasks, who needs to do their part of the job next. And the third smart contract that enables that immutable single source of the truth. So we have a single record of all of the claims decisions, a distributed audit trail of all of those decisions, and the group center can analyze that and keep a hold of it. Each operating entity, each country in Europe, then they have a record of all of their decisions to which they were a counterparty to. So that really helps with their audit trail problems and so on and so forth. So yeah, the combination of each of these three problem patterns then makes blockchain the best solution, and that's why we chose blockchain for this and not some other technology like a centralized database or so on.
Okay. Yeah. It's amazing, because basically what we're saying is that this is changing a lot of manual tasks that people had to do at your different subsidiaries and automating so many different processes, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's you know, that efficiency gain is worth the effort, I think.
Okay. And is it possible to, like, you told me about the volume that the platform is handling, but how does that sort of translate into the business value? Do you summarize that in terms of the benefits or the cost savings or the time savings?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was at the fundamental business case level. You know, that's the reason why we got the okay to go ahead. So we evaluated roughly, you know, we would save some sort of roughly around a few million euros in terms of FTE savings, in terms of efficiency gains. So reduction in rework, reduce of to almost zero, eliminating manual keying errors and so on. So across the whole of Europe, then there's a number of around 25 FTEs, that concept, so full-time equivalents across the whole of Europe. And then which is their time, overtime, for example, at peak times during the year to settle these claims out and so on. So that really impacts then on each of the Allianz companies across Europe to varying degrees. Of course, Germany, one of the biggest, they obviously have more saving relatively to maybe a smaller OE with less volume, like, for example, Romania or Hungary, for example. So really on the people, making their lives better, they don't do as many overtime hours and so on, they can see their families more. And then, of course, there's one of the other benefits then in that enabling the reduction of cross OE debt. So, you know, money sitting in the wrong bank account. you know, the time value of money, that with settling the claims faster means the money can then be moved much, much more quickly, and it's in the right bank account. And then, you know, we can do lots of things with that. So a lot, both human benefits in terms of efficiencies, as well as then monetary benefits in terms of just the efficient placement of capital around the Allianz ecosystem.
Okay. You know, you wouldn't have been able to develop this system in the first place if you didn't have the room for innovation within Allianz. And in fact, you created a really intentful organization that works towards innovation. You call it a digital factory unit. And I wonder if you can tell us about how did you create that area? How do you fund it? And how do you decide what projects are worth to continue developing?
Yeah, so we, you know, up until about the end of 2017, blockchain was an innovation topic at the holding company at Allianz SE, and it had the sort of the attention of innovation manager and so on there, and they triggered POCs around the organization in different parts of the business. In 2018, we deliberately then set up the Global Blockchain Center of Competence. And I decided to set that up within Allianz Technology. So Allianz Technology is the group shared services division, if you like, and we provide technology services for the rest of Allianz Group. But that's where all the technology is. That's where the database teams are. That's where the infrastructure teams are, you know, API teams and front end and back end development units. So to me, blockchain had to stand on its own two feet. So with sponsorship from the group CTO and also the support in Allianz Technology, we set the team up in Allianz Technology, matrix reporting to both the holding company and to Allianz Technology. And that then was funded for a couple of years for research, for education, because, you know, not built here syndrome is something, you know, technologists will understand. So we wanted to build up awareness within the organization, educate, maybe unlearn some myths that they had picked up from, you know, Google page one, and really demonstrate and deliver and educate the value for our business. And that unit allowed us to do that. And as we gained traction then with POCs moving to pilots and MVPs, then I was able to scale up the development team in the Global Center of Competence in India, which we're all one team, if you like. And that's where my development house comes out of, and where we build and develop the code in Munich. Here, then we work with the startups and so on to bring in intelligence, ideas, knowledge, and we can then scale up internally. So there was a real collective effort across the sort of holding company and the technology division to work together, and then to feed out into the business, bring in the ideas, and then develop those ideas and deliver on that business value and those concepts to support business value. So really, really all three have, you know, we have all three here and we have a great start. So it's, we'll continue then to deliver that business value.
Yeah, it's a great model. And I love that external participation where you get the startups involved. And as you said, there was the competition that you had that led to this product eventually, or the solution that you eventually put into operations. So that really demonstrates how the value of spending time on innovation can be realized. It's a long process, right? It doesn't happen overnight. Yeah. Sometimes it takes years, but the payoff can be big. And I wanted to cover this B3i group that you're a member of as well. It's a group of 21 insurance market participants from around the world. And you're well involved with it, Bob. What's the mission of B3i?
B3i's vision is to deliver better insurance enabled by frictionless transfer. You know, that's the mission statement of B3i. It's all about risk transfer and doing that seamlessly. This means enabling the insurance market to deliver better solutions for end customers, primarily, and through faster access to insurance with less administrative costs. So, you know, we've demonstrated ourselves internally that we can do a lot. We can reduce a lot of the inefficiencies in that claims process. For example, for the reinsurance market, where B3i was initially sort of envisaged for, that's even writ large. Yeah, so we're talking bigger numbers and lots more zeros in the reinsurance market than in the personal lines market. As you said, B3i has got 21 shareholders. Allianz is one of those shareholders, and all of the other shareholders are insurance companies from around the globe, every continent, and they have live reinsurance products in the market between the shareholders, which is great validation of our belief in B3i's products and that stewardship of the insurance ecosystem that is sort of for the market and by the market. And these products can then extend beyond the shareholder base into European mutuals, for example, are now engaged under the Europco umbrella with their marine fine art product, which runs across the platform. And there's also nuclear risk pools, which are administered for the Northern European nuclear pools. And those are being administered through B3i products. So you're right, it's taken from the first ideas in 2015, it has taken until now to really get those first big products live. So just underpinning that this technology is more evolutionary, than revolutionary. It's going to be transformative for the insurance industry. But transformation, as you know, in insurance can take some time. But I think the S-curve on this one is significantly shorter than, let's say, when the internet came along back in the 90s. I think, the S-curve will be significantly shorter, but I think no less important transformation which will be undertaken by the insurance industry. So yeah, it's the first time.
And just to highlight there, B3i, it's working from a blockchain platform, and it's taking it from not just a platform that one company like Allianz would use, but in fact a platform that multiple companies would use around the world to settle different insurance processes.
Yeah, absolutely. So like the protocol underpinning B3i is the Corda platform, but I think the protocol is there, and you're right. So we have insurance companies from South America, from like Mapfre. We have in southern Europe. We have CPIC in China. There's North American AXA XL and so on. So it's a real global network, and really the only sort of insurance blockchain distributed ledger network that there is up and running and in production at this point. Everything else is a little bit POC world. So really leading the way there and to transform our business and really to generate that, the proof points that the technology works, and that then the business benefits can be delivered back to the participants that are using the network and learning how to do that. So not only do you get benefits from being part of the network, you have obligations to the network in a distributed architecture, to keep it current, keep it up to date so that it runs smoothly and builds that resiliency into risk transfer business across the globe.
When you set out to build this blockchain platform, you chose the Linux Foundation's Hyperledger Fabric to do so. Why was that the right technology to use?
Yeah, so when we set out to build the ICS, our International Claims Service solution, so it was Hyperledger Fabric was probably the most mature at that point for in terms of enterprise grade. And I think, although we're protocol agnostic at Allianz and say we do both business and we have products in Corda, Hyperledger Fabric is the other sort of enterprise grade ready protocol that's out there. And that was, at that point in time, if you look back, you don't know who the winner is going to be at that point. So we have to make sure we have, let's say, a few eggs in each basket, if you like. So it made sense to us to make sure we went off in one direction for one product that maybe suited that use case better, the sort of international nature of B3i and the different companies involved. Corda was maturing more when those products were getting ready to be built. So I think it's the B2B use case suited Hyperledger Fabric for us at the time, given the size of the minimum viable network that we had available. So as we said, there's 25 entities involved here, 25 network participants. Obviously, B3i is much bigger than that. And we at the time felt that the public permissionless chains weren't really where we wanted to be. We're doing financial contract settlement here, moving. It's important to know that you have deterministic finality on your transaction settlement, as opposed to the public permissionless world where it's probabilistically final. you know, we need to know who owns the contract, who owns the money at the end of the day. And of course, you know, Allianz, we are very proud of our statements and through our actions around supporting sustainable energy production. For example, we don't invest in coal-fired power stations and the like. And of course, the permissionless world operates on proof of work currently in its mature state. And I think that runs counter to our ethos and our ESG commitments. So, you know, when we released the product and it went live, it came alongside it. I wrote a paper on why our blockchain, let's say, used 800 million times less energy per block mine than the public Bitcoin blockchain, for example. And those things are important, you know. And we want to live up to our commitments to our colleagues, to our friends, and to the planet.
Okay. Wow, that's interesting. So it was about really two big factors: being able to control the permission of who could access and record information on the blockchain, and the energy that goes into minting the blockchain, basically. And Bob, I just have, before we wrap up here, I just have to bring it back to your opinion column that we talked about at the beginning of the interview. And there was one nugget in there I was really curious about, because you close it by wondering about the insurable cost of digital assets in the metaverse. So do you see the metaverse, or maybe just NFTs, as a potential new market for the insurance industry?
I'm looking into it, let's put it that way. So when our customers and their children spend, you know, their hard-earned money on virtual assets, you know, on the gaming world, magic cloak that has powers, you know, that's earned either through effort or through, you know, using native tokens inside the game, which of course cost money. You know, is that an insurable asset, and what kinds of claim events can occur from that? And I think, you know, we would be complacent if we weren't investigating really items of value, you know, things of value that our customers value, and how we can insure those for them and get to know it. So I think it's, you know, it's incumbent upon us to be aware and to get into the metaverse, understand what NFTs are. What value do they really hold? What is the insurable value? What are the claims events, and what sort of events happen to those assets? Do they get stolen in the game, or do they get stolen by fraudulent means? Somebody gets hacked, and you have your diamond trove or whatever it is in the game that you describe, like Axie Infinity or whatever it is. Are those of value, and can we insure those? And I think we're at the very beginning of that. You know, I think the NFT space is obviously in full hype at the moment, and you know, with the likes of Beeple selling art for 69 million euros at Christie's or Sotheby's, I can't remember which one it was, you know, Jack Dorsey selling his first tweet for $2.5 million. Yeah. Dollars. You know, where's the value in that? Is it art? You know, is it the knowledge that you hold, the unique? Mm-hmm. Is that where the value is? And as I say, we have to explore. We have to be, like back in 2015, curious, and looking into what the possibilities are. I think that's where we want. And as I say, at Allianz, we've proven we're not afraid to lead from the front on that, and get in there and get our hands dirty, if you like.
Yeah, those are fascinating questions. Bob, thanks so much for joining me on Tech Insights today. This has been a fascinating conversation, and I think one of the best examples I've heard of blockchain in the enterprise being used to solve a real problem. So thank you again for joining me.
Thanks, Brian. Really, really pleased to be on Tech Insights. Happy to be here, and have a good day.
And for our listeners, for Tech Insights, remember to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. You don't want to miss more conversations like this one with Bob Crozier. We're going to be talking about tech trends and the top priorities for technology leaders in the weeks ahead. So subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or really any podcast app that you like to use. I'm Brian Jackson.